What would you say are the most common mistakes that you see related to innovation, portfolio strategy, and management? I mean, what can you do to also avoid or mitigate some of the risks that you see?
So one of the biggest mistakes that I think companies make is, and this is a challenge, which is the pull of the core business. So they'll start by making the innovation and vision explicit. They may even allocate budgetary resources to innovation projects. But if anything happens in the middle of the year that puts the core business under pressure, they'll all get together and pull money from all the innovation projects to start to cover this core. And so one of the things that, you know, if you think about a startup, can you imagine a startup ever getting a phone call from the VC and the VC going, you know, that money we gave you, can you just please give us half of it back? because you know, we're not going to meet our portfolio. That never happens, right? Because the money given to them is theirs, it's actually protected. One of the things that innovators need is they need to know what their runway is so they can plan their work, so they can execute on the experiments and know that there's resources coming, you know, coming through to help them do that. But companies are always taking resources away. They're taking resources away from innovation. So in one sense, they're sacrificing their future in order to kind of meet the present needs, right? So that's one of the biggest things that I would recommend, which is if you do the allocation, try as much as possible to protect that money so that it doesn't get taken back into the mothership whenever there is a problem. Mm-hmm. And then the second challenge which is actually another big challenge is that large companies tend to want to manage the innovation part of their portfolio in the same way that they manage the core part of their portfolio. Mm-hmm. But they set the same expectations, the same metrics, the same targets, the same business planning processes for like transformational innovation, right? And that puts transformational innovators under a lot of pressure to deliver revenue by year five when they don't even really know what the business model is and they're trying to explore and figure that stuff out. Mm-hmm. And so I think, and so that becomes then another reason why they get money taken away from them because they're not demonstrating revenue anyway. So the company somehow feels like it's wasting the money. Which is a strange feeling to have. But if you're using traditional financial metrics, then that feeling is inevitable because it's like P-L-L is more than P. We need to scrap those projects and move things back to the core, right?
And that's another core component also, of course, innovation accounting. You need just to be able to measure and see what's going on in an innovation portfolio and to have the understanding for that. Because as you were kind of mentioning or touching on, I mean, when you're doing a startup, the earlier you are, the more question marks we have. Basically, return on investment is a question mark divided by another question mark. And this is the role of the entrepreneur to figure that out. Yeah. What are these question marks? I mean, who's going to be the customer? How are we going to go to market? How are we going to package and price the product? We're searching, right? Mm-hmm. So we can't apply the same metrics. But what do you say, based on your experience going into companies, helping out companies, do you feel over the years that the understanding for these things, innovation accounting and how you work early stage, searching rather than executing on a business model, is becoming more prevalent, or is it still an uphill battle? And what do you do there to convince them of one rather than the other? You need to have a lot of training and coaching at the beginning before you even get started working on the real issues.
So what's interesting about that is that theoretically, oh, pretty much everyone is starting to get it from a theoretical perspective. You know, they understand that you can't use business planning when you're working on innovation. You have to be searching for sustainably profitable business models. They understand lean. They've read all the books. They've read my book. They've read, you know, they've read a whole bunch of stuff, and they really understand from a theoretical basis what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. They even want to do it. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens is they turn around and they face their company. And the company has embedded systems that will not let them do it. Mm-hmm. So their companies have annual budget cycles. Their companies have incentives and measures of financial success and measures of product success. Their mm-hmm. companies have particular criteria and hurdle rates that you mm-hmm. need to meet before you get investments in particular products, right?
Yeah.
The question becomes, will they transform that system and add into that system innovation accounting metrics? Will they have a system in their business that allows them to recognize where a product is on its innovation journey and then use the right tools to manage and invest in that? And mm-hmm. that's where the hardness starts to become, or the difficulty starts to become really, really clear, because then it's like, well, what do we change? And you have heads of finance and heads of HR that have made their career using this traditional method, and now it's hard to actually try to ask them to actually change.
Yes, and I think also that we spoke about the importance of mindset, and maybe the mindset is shifting to some extent, but no matter if you have the right mindset for innovation, if you don't get to practice innovation and you don't get to put resources into innovation and the time that you need to actually learn and do it, it's still just going to stay kind of lip service, or how you say. I've seen that a lot as well. We spoke about the balance 70-20-10 or what have you. Many companies that we met have less than 1% invested into transformational horizon three. And also there's just no, people are saying, hey, you know, you have to do your business as usual, of course. Don't miss a beat on your job right now. But you also have to innovate. You also have to do all these other things. And they're thinking to themselves, but I'm already working 40, 50-hour weeks, and how am I going to get time for this? Management doesn't say. What are the incentives? And why should I do this? And what's in it for me? And so on and so forth. So we keep running up against these barriers. I mean, we can come with tools and methods and turning people's mindsets in nice workshops and give them books to read. But when they don't really walk the talk, what do you do? That's the big challenge, to get anything working, right? If it's an innovation portfolio or innovation strategy or innovation accounting. It's just,
yes, absolutely. And what has happened is that in our work, we haven't recognized yet that our job is to transform organizations.
Exactly.
We do our work as innovators as if our job is to train people on how to run experiments and do MVPs and do all these things. But they can't do that stuff if they're not in an organization that supports that. And so what we then say is, well, let's move all these people to an innovation lab, right? But even in the innovation lab, eventually, somebody will reach out there and use the wrong metric to measure the success of the lab. So regardless of whether or not it's an innovation lab, and I support innovation labs, and I think that they help provide a safe environment for people to work. But regardless of whether or not you're in an innovation lab or you're doing innovation right inside the company, or you maybe even you're managing a corporate venture capital arm, whatever it is, you have to be thinking about how do you bridge the gap between your work and how the larger company works, right? And that work is really important. You do need to do the work of changing the criteria for making investments, right? Changing, convincing companies to drop business cases and business plans for early stage products and moving those business plans and business cases to later on in the process. And some of the work that I've done with Pearson on the product lifecycle, or the lean product lifecycle, as we call it, does exactly that, right? We took the traditional business case that Pearson used and we disaggregated it and said, which of these things can people answer early? Which of these things can people answer later? And then we spread that across a life cycle. And so now every product is defined by its stage in the life cycle. And that stage of the life cycle defines what questions managers ask of that product and the expectation, which, and also the level of investment that a product can get. So early stage in products get smaller investments, and they're asked questions about customer needs, you know, availability of market, can we deliver value, et cetera, what is the right business model? And then once all of that is figured out and we have data for that, we can start to move on to making business cases and projections, because all of those are actually based on validated learnings, right? Mm-hmm. And so we move from ideation to growth in a sort of incremental iterative way, rather than just saying, you have an idea, here's 3 million, I expect 20 million by year 5. So, we're trying to change that mindset, which means that then the organization has to change its tools and templates. It has to change its accounting system. It has to change how it manages products coming through. It has to change when it expects things to deliver revenue. All of those things have to happen. And all of that is really painful change, which is 2 steps forward, 3 steps back. It's just a daily grind to get organizations to the point where they can start to think about themselves as ecosystem.
How do you go about enacting change in a big organization? Because we spoke about that. It's not just about the mindset, which is important, of course, or tools and methods, but actually it's just as much about change management, making it happen in real life. And where would you start? Would you start trying to identify the barriers to innovation in an organization and deal with that first before introducing tools and methods? Or would you rather start small, but start now, as they say, and then learn from that, identify barriers as they come along, and then try and set up some kind of structure for removing them or mitigating them over time.
So both, right? I mean, if you think about it from a lean, if you think about applying lean startup thinking to transformation, the first thing you do, you have to do is discovery. Every organization I've been in, there is somebody who's been hurt trying to do innovation. The innovators everywhere. You ask managers who's your least favorite employee who's always breaking the rules. I want to meet that person. You have lunch with that person and they tell you everything they bump up against.
Yeah.
You meet people that are working in innovation labs or people that had innovation labs and then got brought back into the main company. You know, what happened? Where are all the barriers, right? So you have to do discovery. But after having done discovery, you also have to start small. Because again, whatever you discovered, there's other things that are unknowns that are kind of waiting to kill you. So I always recommend that, you know, you try and implement a minimum viable ecosystem. You choose an early adopter business unit where the leader gets it and then the team gets it and they have a big enough portfolio to try and test some of these ideas. And then you start working with them. And then working with them, you start bumping up against the more cross-company things like HR, finance, and all this, right? And then that starts to reveal some of the challenges you're facing. And because this is an early adopter business unit, they're much more tolerant of you making mistakes, much more tolerant of you like doing things wrong, and they're willing to help you figure it out. And then as you start to figure things out and you start to show success, one of the things you want to do is to get an early win really quickly, something really amazing, like retire a product that was wasting money, launch something new or test something and then like stop working on it and then save that project, the $3 million budget they had. Whatever it is, you want to start having those early wins and celebrating those. And if other business units start to hear that, you start to then people voluntarily coming to you, maybe asking for help for one or two projects. And then after a while, you know, to my mind, it's a 3-5 year journey to really get companies, you know, to actually transform their ways of working.
Can you talk a little bit about large companies that you see out there that you think have managed to build a well-balanced innovation portfolio, what they've done right and how they're working, practical examples, anything?
That is a hard one.
Yes, it is.
Because when we were building our model, we were looking at best practices in various things. And then we're saying, oh, that's really good. They have a portfolio management system. Oh, that's really good. They have a framework. Oh, that's really good. They have a... And so we then hacked that stuff up and kind of put it together. I think one of my favorite companies in all of this is 3M. 3M for me answer a whole bunch of questions for me. One of the first questions that they answer for me is when people say, this only works for software. So I'm like, no, actually, you know, 3M make real things. Post-it notes and toothpaste and all, you know, all types of things, right? So that really answers that question for me. And then the second thing that's interesting for me is that 3M use what they call stretch goals, where they say that a certain percent of their portfolio must have products launched within the last 4 years. And so they have this goal to say, you know, 25% to 30% of our revenue must be from products launched within the last 4 years. And so that's already like, you know, pushing their portfolio to always be future facing and always be balanced. And what's interesting about that is that then that pushes their managers with those stretch goals to start looking for innovation, whereas managers are usually incentivized to get bonuses only on core revenue, right? And so you know, while those managers are looking for that innovation, 3M then have a really huge R&D system where they fund nascent ideas, and then when those ideas are set to show promise, they accelerate them and then they kind of, you know, put them out to market. And so it's kind of a really joined up strategic innovation management ecosystem that works really well. Yeah.
And I think also you mentioned incentives. I see that often as some kind of barrier to innovation as well. There are many, many, many. I listed some 40 of them recently. But incentives keep coming up. And it's so different depending on what country you're in and what organization you're in, what they are allowed to do. Some can't even use incentives at all in terms of monetary incentives and so on and so forth. But it's a big challenge for making people work in this new way. What's in it for me? I keep coming back to that, many managers or leadership can't answer that.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's interesting is that like CEOs, will speak about innovation, like, you know, at the exec C level, they talk about innovation, they get innovation, they're encouraging their company, their employees to be much more innovative. But then when they come down and have one-to-one conversations with their business unit managers, they ask them about revenue in the last 3 months.
Exactly.
So it's like, they're getting in their own way. And then what happens is the employees on the ground hearing their CEOs talk about innovation start to accuse the middle managers, saying, you guys are the ones that are blocking innovation. But the middle managers know that if they give you money for innovation, that's going to be, you know, a cost on their budget. Mm-hmm. And the CEO is asking them to deliver a certain margin. Mm-hmm. And then they'll be bonused on that. And so, you know, they're not going to invest on something that generates revenue in year six, right? Mm-hmm. So there's an old tension the CEOs have to manage, and, you know, executive boards have to manage to stop getting in their own way when they're trying to encourage their, you know, their employees to innovate. Mm-hmm.
And I guess also that's what we need to do as innovation strategy consultants, or what you want to call it, the innovation catalysts or what have you. We need to be intellectually honest when we're working with companies. We can't just say, yeah sure, we'll do a workshop here, we'll do a hackathon there. They are putting expectations and demands on us. We need to do that to them as well, because otherwise we're selling the wrong thing, and we're not trying to help long term. Because innovation, as we can just notice from this brief discussion, is extremely complex, and it consists of many, many components that need to work together. And just taking middle management, sort of the permafrost layer that stops things, even if you get leadership on board and they're walking the talk and they want to do these things, we might still run into many, many problems in different layers of the organization. And then we need to sometimes take a step back before we can move forward. So even if they say, hey, let's do this, and this is the timeline and the implementation, sometimes we need to be intellectually honest and say, it's not going to be possible. We better look at this. Is this something that you've experienced as well when it comes to helping companies build innovation portfolios?
Yes, absolutely.
Just having to slow down before moving forward.
Not only do you have to slow down before moving forward, you have to move forward and then go back.
Yes.
And then move forward and then go back some more. That's just the nature of the beast, right?
Yes.
And you can't throw a rock these days onto a street without hitting an innovation consultant, right? And everyone, they're everywhere, and they're all selling, you know, business model design, agile, lean startup thinking, et cetera, et cetera. And they're quite happy just to sell the hype, sell the workshop, you know, all of that, right? But very few are willing to take on the hard work of helping companies really change the way they work. Those conversations are too hard. It's just too difficult. But then what I find is that, like, after those companies have dealt with those consultants, when we then come in there and try and kind of use the same language, they don't want to talk to you, because they're like, yeah, well, 2 months ago we had one of you guys here. They ran an accelerator program for us, and nothing happened to those ideas. And so, you know, it's a bit of a challenge, and we do have to be authentic in our work. We do have to have an authentic interest in helping the people that are paying us, you know, do better.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's what I feel also. The innovation, because of its complexity, is not just that you can be an expert in one little area and expect to be able to help large companies build long-term growth. It's just not going to happen. You need to take a holistic picture or viewpoint of what innovation is, and that's a long-term grind towards something that works.
Yes.
And so we should maybe make it more difficult also for getting to but you were mentioning early wins and things, and I agree with you on that, definitely. Yeah. So that's a way of moving forward to get the mandate to continue.
Well, there is no soundbite for what you just said, right? Yeah. There's no one-line soundbite for you transform your organization so you can have a repeatable process of turning ideas. Yeah.